All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
Good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry. I was a chief warrant officer in Vietnam in 1969. We want to welcome you to our program today. It's been really busy all day as far as I'm concerned. We have a big event coming up tomorrow night here in Ann Arbor that is going to be benefiting Fisher House, and I'm going to be getting to that in just a moment. But I want to make sure that you guys come out for that because you get to see what I look like. You get to see another beautiful helicopter pilot that will be there also, and going to hear some amazing stories. We just went through a rehearsal for the last 2 hours and something minutes, which is why we skidded in to the studio right now. So if I sound a little out of breath, it's only because I just got here myself. There are some events that are coming up that I did want to point out to you, though, and one is being put on by our good friends up at the Ward Church up in Northville, Michigan. And this is their Military Appreciation Breakfast, and this is coming up on Saturday, November 17th. And that's 8:30 in the Knox Hall, and the tickets are available. And you just need to go to Ward Church, ward.church/military-breakfast, and all that information is on there. They put on this breakfast every year. I've been out there a couple of times now, and they really do a great job of honoring military veterans. And they, you know, it feels good. It feels good when civilians do that. And these are very dedicated people. And they have a guest that's another World War II survival. He's going to talk all about his experiences there. His name is Virgil Thill, and Virgil is a member of the Ward Church, so it looks like it's going to be kind of a great opportunity. So that's a Military Appreciation Breakfast at Ward Church on Saturday, November 17th at 8:30, and that's at Knox Hall there. It's out there on 6 Mile Road by Haggerty. And yeah, check it out. Go to Ward Church. I think you'll find that to be very interesting for you. Another organization that has really helped us out in the short term is it's a group called Rags of Honor. And this is a company in Chicago, Illinois, and they make church t-shirts for veterans and military personnel. And they are dedicated to doing something about this, you know, these 22 veterans committing suicide on a daily basis. So they have an event coming up on Sunday, November 18th, if you happen to be in Chicago, at the United Center Atrium, and they're going to jump for vets, which sounds really cool. And so at 10 o'clock Chicago time on Sunday, November 18th, at the United Center Atrium, the Rags of Honor is sponsoring a jump for vets where everybody's going to go out there and jump rope, which would be a good trick for me, but for some of us, an interesting trick. They want to do 2,200 jumps and 100 jumps for every daily suicide by a veteran. Takes less than 45 seconds to do this. I don't know how fast they're jumping. 2,200 jumps would take me maybe a week. But they say it improves the life of at least one veteran. So they had our backs. Let's jump for theirs. And so I encourage you to look up, where did it go? Rags of Honor Platoon, or Rags of Honor, and all the information will be on their websites. That's ragsofhonor.com. And it's working with a group called Get Trooped, or Get Troped. Excuse me, I can't even read today. Jump for Vets, or Jumping Rope to Raise Awareness for Veteran Suicide. If you're in the Chicagoland area, please come down and join them at the United Center Atrium. 45 seconds of your time, that's all they're asking to save, maybe one life. So do that, you guys. I know you like to do those types of things. All right, and, oh, I know, one more thing. There is a new museum out there, folks, and it's in Columbus, Ohio. Yes, I said Ohio. It's all right. It's called the National Veterans Memorial and Museum has officially opened in Columbus, Ohio. It's the first and only nationally designated museum in the United States to honor veterans of all wars and all conflicts. It's 50,000 square foot museum, 2.5 acre memorial garden. I've been invited to go down there and hoping to get down there fairly soon, but it's the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. I encourage you to go there. Their website is nvmm.org. nvmm.org. It's in Columbus, Ohio. It's brand new, just opened. They've got Colin Powell was there for the opening. All kinds of well-known Ohio veterans, including Senator John Glenn, is there's a display for him. So I encourage you to go and do that. All right, that's all we got time for today. So we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back, and we're going to be talking about the Fisher House Salute to Veterans. That's coming up tomorrow night. So don't touch the dial or your computer or anything. That's an order. We'll be right back. And we are back on Veterans Radio, and as since most everybody in the room right now was in the Army, I figured it was a good tune to choose for our bump today. Joining me in the studio is the Executive Director of Fisher House, Michigan, a former captain in the United States Army, an Apache pilot, and my good friend now, Kate Melcher. Kate, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you here. So tell me what we've been up to all day. So what's going on tomorrow night?
Oh, my goodness. Tomorrow night is an event at Hill Auditorium called Stories of Service. It's the signature event of Fisher House, Michigan every year, and we host it to raise awareness of veterans' issues and to raise funds for Fisher House, Michigan. And today was our first rehearsal where we had all of our storytellers together, save one, but you'll hear from him later. And oh, my gosh. Hearing these stories, I'm still trying to catch my breath. And it wasn't because I ran in here at the last minute. I'm just so moved.
No, it was so emotional. The guests that are involved, I mean, you've got, I'll get to him in a minute myself. but we have women veterans. We had a woman nurse from Vietnam. We have an Army veteran. We have a Navy veteran who is part of the Bent Prop Project. For those of you that listen to Veterans Radio, we've had them on a couple of times to talk about what they do. Is they go all over the world and where aircraft have crashed, military aircraft have crashed, and they attempt to recover the remains. And Flip has got some great stories, not necessarily about finding them, but the after story of when the families find out that, you know, that their son is finally coming home 70 years later, or something along those lines. And of course, Edie was a nurse in Vietnam, and her story was so powerful to me, especially because she was in Vietnam approximately the same time I was. And everything that she hit in her story, I'm going, yep, yep, yep. So it was just great. And Ray, who, you know, the Army saved his life and gave him direction, and boy, did it give him direction, and what a great storyteller he is. And Marissa's, anyway, as you can tell, it was an emotional afternoon. But so tell me, tell us real quick, where do people go to find more information? It's all free, by the way, folks. This is all free, but they do like you to register and reserve some space, because it may actually be crowded, very crowded this year, it looks
like.
That's
right. That's right. It is general admission, and doors are going to open at 6:30, so be there as close to 6:30 as you can to make certain you get a seat. The other way to make certain you get a seat is to go online to www.storiesofservice.org, O-R-G, and you can register for your free tickets there. You know, Hill Auditorium holds 3,500 folks, and we might have the problem of having more than that tomorrow night, and that's a great problem to have.
That would be awesome. I mean, just awesome.
Absolutely.
I have I've had the privilege of being on that stage one time hundreds of years ago, and you just look up and all those people are looking at us, and now I'm getting nervous. But but the idea is that it's going to be a wonderful evening. The money goes for
for Fisher House, Michigan. Our organization is raising funds to bring Ronald McDonald-style houses to the VA campuses around the state. So far, two are approved, one in Ann Arbor and one in Detroit. And my board of directors said, you know what, to really make this mission work, to be able to build all these houses and to support the families when they're in residence there, it's a $20 million mission. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, Michiganders have already stepped up in a huge way. We've raised nearly $4 million in just the first 18 months mm-hmm. of fundraising. So great thanks to all of our supporters that are out there. Come out and support us tomorrow. Come to our free event, hear the stories, support us financially, or support us with the gift of gab.
Mm-hmm.
Get online, find us on social media, share our content. It is the best way for you to get real-time information about what we're doing at Fisher House, and we're doing big things.
They are doing big things. In fact, I had another announcement that I skipped about a fundraiser, two fundraisers for Fisher House. Number one is locally in Ann Arbor, and this is the Michigan Ability Partners are having a little breakfast, looks like a bistro, evening. Okay. The Standard Bistro on Sunday, November 11th from 4 o'clock till 7 p.m. on Veterans Day. And all the money and funds that they raise, a portion of it is going to be going to the Fisher House as well.
Excellent. We have one other large fundraiser that I should mention. Giving Tuesday is coming up. You know how during Thanksgiving week you've got Black Friday and Cyber Monday and all of these things. The Tuesday after Thanksgiving, November 27th this year, is called Giving Tuesday. And there's mm-hmm. a couple major things happening. Number one is that Facebook is matching dollar for dollar up to $1 million donated through Facebook. And you can mm-hmm. donate to Fisher House through Facebook, through our page. So that's one thing. And the other one is local. It's right here with the Reinhardt Realtors. They're doing a progressive fundraising day, starting with breakfast, moving on to a baked potato bar at lunch, and a trivia night that evening. All of that information is on our Facebook page and on Reinhardt Realty's Facebook page. They are also matching gifts that day.
Wow. I got another one here that says Super 8 is also going to be matching funds. Let's see. This is the Fisher House Foundation and the funds Super 8 by Wyndham. For those of you that are traveling, you can stop. They're going to be working to raise money on behalf ahead of Veterans Day. We're going to make that $20 million maybe next week. We're working on it. We're working on it. Of course, there are many other things going on. Don't forget next week is Veterans Day, next Sunday. And don't forget, folks, that Veterans Day is to celebrate veterans, the ones that actually made it home, and to celebrate their service and so forth. Memorial Day is for those that didn't make it home. And so we want to make sure that, you know, don't be sad next Sunday on Veterans Day. It's a good day. Veterans are going to be going out to eat for free. Pretty much, and every restaurant now has big signs up, you know, come on out for Veterans Day and so forth. And, in fact, I got an email from Applebee's that they're hoping to serve 1 million meals on Veterans Day across wow. the country. So that's awesome. And we as a veteran, we surely appreciate everything that everybody is doing to support their veterans and, of course, to support Fisher Houses across the country. But more importantly, right now in Michigan, we want to make sure that they do that. And speaking of that, in our storytellers that we listened to earlier today, the one that was missing is a gentleman, and I use the term with great respect, sir, is in the studio with us today, and he's going to tell us a little bit about his experiences, and we're not going to give away his finale because you have to come to the program tomorrow night to learn about that. But in the studio right now is a gentleman who was in Germany during the 30s, was escaped from Germany, came to the United States, was tempted to join the Navy, but was rejected because he was a foreigner, and then a couple of years later he was just fortunate enough to get drafted into the Army. And joining me right now in the studio is Guy Stern. Mr. Stern, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Mr. Thornberry. It's a pleasure to be one of the voices of American veterans and one of the voices to speak for this concept of the Fisher House, which is a great, great institution to come here and to know that there will be housing and care for the nearest and dearest of a veteran. It could be me who needs mm-hmm. care in the hospital, and to know that I have my wife right next door.
It's a great program that they've got going here. And earlier on, we heard Kate's story of how she came upon Fisher House. And since I've been talking with her and the other people at Fisher House, so many people have benefited from just having some place where they can go and can get help and get comfort and get family and so forth. But tell me a little bit more about Guy Stern. So they wouldn't let you join the Navy, but they did let you be drafted.
They let me be drafted, and I had my basic training in Camp Barkley, Texas. And one day was called to the company commander, and he said, Private Stern, you're shipping out. And I said to him, yes, sir, where am I going? He said, no, I can't tell you that. Military secret, top secret, and you will be on a train. And after you have gone through Texas for 3 hours, you can open your new orders, and then you will know what to do. You'll be going to one state and landing up in a different state. It was all very mysterious, and so I opened up my orders. They told me to get off the train, change in Baltimore, Maryland, get to West Virginia, being picked up by a truck from the Army and land at Camp Ritchie, Maryland. They didn't say much to me. So when I got there, I saw a camp entrance, which looked an opening to a beautiful landscape, as it turned out to be, with a lake inside. And I saw the sign over the entrance of the camp, and it said, Military Intelligence Training Camp, MITC. I can betray the military secret that we renamed it Military Institution of Total Confusion. There I was. I still had only a vague idea what was to be done there, but they freed me of my ignorance in the training that we went through, because it was 9 weeks of the most intense training I have had in my life, including the training I got at Columbia University, getting a PhD, which was fairly rough, but Camp Ritchie outdid all that. We learned every aspect, the most modern aspect of military intelligence gathering in those 9 weeks, ranging from learning the Morse code to terrain intelligence, drawing maps, and very important, two aspects, learning how to interrogate prisoners, being given the methods of doing so. One of them was, you never touch a prisoner, was one of the first things. You are part of the Geneva Convention, and we are part of it, and you are bound by those rules. And then they trained us in mock interviews, for example, interrogating other U.S. soldiers. Mm-hmm. And then after a while, we got a big surprise. The prisoners taken at the African campaign, many of them, or quite a few, were shipped to Camp Ritchie, Maryland. The name comes from a former governor of the state, and being told, how do you interrogate a prisoner? Mm-hmm. And some of my presentation that you mentioned before at the Hill Auditorium, I will talk about those methods and the methods we evolved as thinking and creative soldiers.
You were. As part of the Ritchie Boys, which is what you all came to be known, were you all immigrants from Eastern European or Germany and so forth prior to the war, and then you were sent back?
You got it almost right, but it wasn't all. There were some people who had the same skills for which we were sent to mm-hmm. Camp Ritchie, Maryland, and that was language skill, cultural background, ability to deal with people, even recalcitrant prisoners, and some skills that we learned in addition.
Okay, I want our audience to be really aware of this, that the Ritchie Boys, at least the book, there's a, if you go to Veterans Radio, you can type in Ritchie Boys, R-I-T-C-H-I-E.
Yes, sir.
Boys, and we did a program a number of years ago with another, somebody, an author, I can't remember the whole story right now, but many of you were Jews who had to leave.
We were refugees.
Refugees.
Many of them Jewish.
Right.
As by definition. But not all. You know, the Nazis also persecuted Social Democrats, and they persecuted Jehovah's Witnesses. Mm-hmm. So we all were assembled at Camp Ritchie, underwent the same training, and emerged more knowledgeable than when we started.
All right. When did you arrive back in Europe? When did you land over there?
Okay. They made a recent film about our the camp, I beg your pardon, as a place from which we embarked, and that was Fort Hamilton in Brooklyn, New York. Mm-hmm. And from there, we embarked there, reached Europe in 43. And as you know, the invasion followed the year thereafter, and we took part in that.
How long after D-Day did you arrive on the shores of France?
Right. We had one team. I was member of a six-person team, each staggered by their special skills. And immediately, one of our contingents, two people from our team, were asked to go H minus a couple of hours by parachute.
Oh.
They did very bravely, and I wasn't one of them. The second contingent went on D-Day plus one. My buddy and I were asked to get on shore on D plus three.
Okay. And then, as you mentioned earlier when we were talking, that you didn't go straight, obviously you didn't go straight to Germany. You were interrogating prisoners along the way.
Yes. The first type of interrogation on the shores of Normandy was tactical information. Mm-hmm. For example, where are those howitzers that are shelling us? How many men are in that particular outfit facing us? These were tactical questions. Later on, our team, Team 41, was asked to do strategic interrogation, which would mean that we wanted to know the intention, for example, of the enemy, that we would want to know how much information they had about us. We wanted to know how they reacted to our leaflets, to our propaganda warfare. And finally, they wanted to know every bit of printed material that was useful for the war effort. So we pored over anything that we could find. Mm-hmm. Let us say we had taken over a company headquarters. We immediately went through all the papers that they had assembled and squeezed out information below all that bump that is in bureaucracy, and forwarded every day a 40-page report, and that went to more than 40 outfits in the U.S. Army, and we got all sorts of questionnaires from every type of unit, from the German quartermasters to the artillery, what they wanted to know.
Well, I can't wait to talk to you later on, more later on tonight, and maybe have you back on the program. But I strongly encourage people to come out tomorrow night to the Fisher House. Stories of Service. You're going to be moved emotionally. Hope you're going to be able to be moved financially to make your donations to Fisher House. And, Guy, I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your busy day, it sounded like. You've already gone through an interview with the German television. and joining us here on Veterans Radio just to talk about it. You got to go to this thing to hear the rest of his story. It's very powerful. And right now you are the head of the Holocaust Museum here in Michigan.
No, I was for a while. I was okay. Acting head because our founder.
But you are affiliated.
Our founder died, and they asked me to step in, and I took over for about 10 months. But mm-hmm. we have a permanent and very able CEO and director of that Holocaust Museum in Farmington Hills, Michigan. And mm-hmm. today, for example, perhaps as a reaction to the events, we were swamped with visitors.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to remind our audience that if you know of any World War II veterans like Guy, you got to get out there and talk to them. Find out what they did while they were in the service. These are stories that are not going to be around that much longer. And because I know Guy is only, what, 93?
96.
96. Holy smokes. Hey, I gave another 4 years here. But anyway, I want to thank you very much for being on the program. Kate, thank you so very much. We want to make sure that people can do this. Stories of Service, tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Hill Auditorium, Ann Arbor, Michigan. Be there, be square. We'll be back right after the news. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We're back on Veterans Radio, and we want to welcome you here. My name is Dale Thronberry, and I want to make sure that I give a shout-out to our sponsors today. That's Legal Help for Veterans at LegalHelpForVeterans.com, and also American House on Lavoie and Westland, Michigan, for supporting Veterans Radio. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, you can give us a call here at 734-822-1600, 734-822-1600. Well, we're going to do a little switch in gears here from our fundraiser for the Fisher House on Monday night. And we're going to come back and talk about the VA. And I know what you guys are all thinking, oh, here we go, the VA again. But this is an important story. This is a very positive story, actually. My guest today is going to be Suzanne Gordon. And Suzanne is an award-winning journalist and author. She's written for the New York Times, Los Angeles Times, Post, The Atlantic, The Nation, just about everything. Themes like she's written 30 books, including Life Support, Three Nurses on the Front Lines, Behind the Checklist, What Else Healthcare Can Learn from Aviation Teamwork and Safety. And your book now is entitled Wounds of War. And so welcoming to Veterans Radio, Suzanne Gordon. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for being on our program, and thank you very much for writing this book.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it.
I did. I have to admit that I have not finished it entirely, but when I first received it, I said, uh-oh, here we go, another hit job on the VA. But it's not at all. So tell me what motivated you to write this story.
So I have been a journalist since 1970, and I have spent more than half of my career writing about mostly private sector healthcare. I write about nurses, health systems, and how our healthcare system and other healthcare systems around the world deliver healthcare to patients. And in the course of doing my work, I experienced and talked a lot to people at the Veterans Health Administration, which is the largest of the three agencies in the Department of the VA, of the Veterans Affairs, what we call the VA.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw some stuff that really impressed me. I saw how transparent and accountable the VA is, and compared to private sector healthcare that I'd covered. I saw some incredible innovations that were being done in patient safety and the kind of healthcare teamwork that keeps patients safe. Many hospitals that I have reported on or observed in the private sector kind of give lip service to teamwork, but they don't really spend any resources or devote any time teaching people how to work on teams. Mm-hmm. And the VA really does, and I thought, well, that's pretty impressive. And I met some VA caregivers and talked to some veterans, and I thought, well, it would be really interesting to write a book to see how a national health system, because the Veterans Health Administration is really our only national health system, and it's our largest health system, how a national health system that is integrated and coordinated, how it can deliver care to patients. And so I devoted 5 years to interviewing hundreds of veterans and their families, to observing veterans at various VA facilities around the country, and I wrote this book, Wounds of War, How the VA Delivers Health, Healing, and Hope to the Nation's Veterans.
Yes, you did.
It's a long book, but I hope you liked it.
I did. The thing is, Suzanne, we're talking with Suzanne Gordon, who is the author of Wounds of War, is, you know, you talk about how the Department of Veterans Affairs, the VA, works at the three separate departments. And we covered this last week when we do our benefits program. We wanted to make sure that people understood that there are three separate entities. There's the disability side, there's the burial side, and then there's the health side. And that's what you're mostly talking about, correct?
Yes, it is. And that's what the whole privatization debate is about. Mm-hmm. It's the VA. The Veterans Health Administration, the VHA, has a budget of something like over $80 billion a year, and there are a lot of private sector doctors and hospitals and pharmaceutical companies and so forth, with mental health providers, who would like to get their hands on that money, and they don't really know much about veterans. They don't know about the specific problems that were exacerbated or acquired in military service. They can't recognize the difference between insomnia and nightmares in me, who's not a veteran, and mm-hmm. and my friend, who's a Vietnam veteran, et cetera. And yet in Washington, the Trump administration and a lot of people in Congress are pushing legislation, have passed legislation, and pushing a bunch of different activities that will would essentially end up in privatizing the VHA. For sure.
Well, let's talk about this a little more. There was an article I read, and I can't remember if it was in the Times or something along those lines, that talked about it, a survey that they took in northern New York State, and talking to civilian doctors and so forth about working with veterans.
Right.
And they found that they would be really uncomfortable working with veterans. So what makes the VA population so different?
Right. So that was a RAND study, and sadly it wasn't reported in the New York Times or any mm-hmm. other major media outlet. I reported on it. It was a mm-hmm. RAND study that looked at healthcare providers in private sector hospitals and offices and so forth in New York State, which has the fifth largest veteran population in the country, and it showed that according to their very careful criterion that they developed to show whether people are able and willing and competent to take care of veterans' very specific problems, that only 2% of the providers surveyed were what they called ready to serve veterans. Mm-hmm. And another study just came out about family physicians kind of like being baffled by how you correctly and appropriately care for veterans who have, as you know, very specific health care problems.
Mm-hmm. They do. And as a matter of fact, I was going to, I wanted to kind of go into that a little bit more when we were talking about that, quote, RAND study that they did, is that to follow the question, I'm out of sequence myself today, I apologize. But,
oh, no.
So how does the VA health system really differ from the other health care programs that are out there?
So it's so important. That question is so important because, you know, a lot of veterans who are served by the VHA, and by the way, not all veterans are eligible because we have 20 million veterans in America, and the VHA, you know, has 9 million enrollees, and about 6 or 7 million totally depend on the VHA
right.
for their care. And that help. So many of those veterans who may think, you know, they may have complaints or whatever, and they think the grass is greener. They've never experienced private sector healthcare the way I have for the past 73 years. Or, you
right,
know.
Yes.
I mean, I'm just turned 73, so, you know, I mean, let's say 63 years, because by, till I, you know, I, when I was a kid, I didn't know what was happening. But,
right.
But basically, I have the best health insurance you can have, and can see the best doctors, and I will never get the quality of care that veterans have because my care is uncoordinated. And for it's episodic. The doctors that I see don't talk to each other. They don't talk to pharmacists. They don't talk to dietitians. They don't talk to psychologists. In the Veterans Health Administration, care is coordinated and integrated on several levels. You can be a veteran and you can move from Boston to San Francisco and you can find a facility that you can go to, you know, more or less no questions asked. Your mm-hmm. electronic medical record, unless there's some kind of weird glitch, will follow you. Unlike me, it took me 5 months to get my records from Boston to San Francisco when I moved here a couple years ago. But then at the, this is the most important, the care is actually integrated. So, you go to your primary care doctor, and it's very primary care based, the VA, VHA. And let's say you say, oh, I'm feeling down, I'm feeling blue, I'm having nightmares, I'm having insomnia. They will screen you immediately for PTSD, depression, anxiety, and a bunch of other mental and behavioral health problems. But more to the point, rather than giving you a referral and to make an appointment to some, you know, psychologist or licensed clinical social worker somewhere out there in the city where you are, they will walk you down the hall and introduce you to a mental health professional who will talk to you on the spot, and that makes it much more likely that you'll get treatment. The same is true if you're having trouble with weight. You'll get walked down the hall to a dietitian. If you're having trouble understanding having to take your complicated medications, you'll walk down to a pharmacist. This is kind of almost unheard of in the rest of healthcare, and clinicians work with each other in many other ways. I have a friend who's an Iraq vet who's 30 and has 16 different problems. Whoa. And he told me I go to the VA, the VHA at Fort Miley in San Francisco, it's one-stop shopping. If I had to run around, you know, San Francisco to 16 different healthcare providers, I'd be in a ditch.
Oh, sure, sure. I can't imagine doing that. I was thinking of, I just started using the VA myself, VA healthcare program, and the nice thing I like about the primary care, at least here in Ann Arbor, is that that when I do see my primary care doctor, she spends a half hour with me.
Yes, I'm so glad you said that, because if you were me with my great healthcare insurance, right? Mm-hmm. My doctor spends 10 minutes with me, and it's like looking at the clock, you know, can we get over this? I mean, she's mm-hmm. wonderful. She's a wonderful woman, but they're, you know, they have so many patients. They have like two or three times as many patients as a VA doctor has, so they will have 10 minutes with you to, you know, go over your meds, figure out what's wrong with you, do preventative health care. Guess what? A lot of it doesn't get done, mm-hmm. and I sit in these exams and discussions with veterans and their primary care doctor, and it's like, you know, let's talk about how you take your meds, let's talk about your exercise program. It's because they just have more time.
It is a one-stop shop, and that's what I really like about it. We're talking with Suzanne Gordon. Her book is entitled Wounds of War, How the VA Delivers Health, Healing, and Hope to the Nation's Veterans. And I guess I should go right to that question. How does the VA offer health, healing, and hope to the veterans?
Well, it you know, veterans have so many complex problems, and it's not just health. It's not just diseases. They have economic problems. They have housing problems. Horrible homelessness problems. They have vocational problems. They have adjustment to civilian life problems. Because you're 18 years old and you go into the military and you learn a lot of things, but you don't necessarily learn how to shop and cook your own meals and figure out what to wear. And your life is very structured in ways that an 18-year-old's in the civilian environment isn't. And if you spent 20 years or 30 years in the military, you can have a hard time adjusting to civilian life. If you've been in combat and been deployed, you know, you go through some pretty bad experiences, and it's hard to succeed in college. It's so hard to tell you how many ways they deliver this health, healing, and hope, because I have seen so many different programs around the country. I could describe a few. There's an amazing program in Martinez, California, where it's a residential program for veterans who have mild traumatic brain injury, but they still have traumatic brain injury, chronic pain, and severe PTSD. And these veterans are taught, you know, they live there, they work with these very dedicated psychologists and social workers and nurses and doctors and so forth, and their pain is managed through non-opiate medications, through yoga, massage, mindfulness, meditation. They go to therapy classes, they learn how to cook. They're now working with the program, the Pathway Home program, that used to be a standalone program and is now working with the VA. I was at a program in Memphis, Tennessee that was amazing, where the VA has partnered with the University of Memphis to teach, to run yearly courses for police officers to teach them how not to kill mentally ill people that they encounter in their rounds. There's an amazing telehealth program. I was at blind rehabilitation centers. There's 13 of them around the country. Polytrauma centers, spinal cord injury centers. The VHA has pioneered ways to help veterans who've killed people in war cope with that. There's national centers for PTSD all over the country.
Right.
You know, it's almost, you ask how, there's so many ways, and these programs are all umbilically connected to each other. You know, so primary care is connected to mental health care, is connected to oncology, cancer care, to orthopedics, to pain management, to end-of-life care, to geriatric care, and it's a tapestry. It's a tapestry of care, and it depends on the integrity of each and every thread. And what we're seeing now is, you know, people trying to pull one thread out and then another thread out and then another thread out, starving the system of resources, adding to delays. And we have it's an amazing healthcare system, and it's about to be dismantled if veterans don't get it and really start objecting to this.
Well, I certainly agree with you on that. And the question becomes, you know, that there are some problems, obviously, within the VHA. And I think one of the things that you brought up is they keep cutting their budgets back, and so they're not able to, you know, to hire people. The doctors need to be paid accordingly, and as does the staff need to be paid accordingly. And the one thing I've noticed at our VA here in Ann Arbor is the camaraderie between the different departments. You know, a large percentage of the people that work there are veterans themselves, for one
thing. A third of the almost 300,000 employees in the VA are veterans.
And they, you know, of course, they can empathize with whatever issue you've been through. And many of them, of course, have gone through the same issues. Let's put it that way. And you were mentioning all the support programs that are out there. I think the VA, one thing they need to do is to publicize these ideas more and more, because, as you mentioned, there's end of care, there's long-term nursing if necessary, companion care.
And peer support and caregiver support, but all of it depends on funding and staffing. And what we've seen now is that in June, they passed the Mission Act. It's called the Mission Act, the VA Mission Act, which is about to destroy the mission of the VA, because the president and Republicans in Congress refused to fund this outsourcing of VA care. So they're sending more and more veterans to private sector providers who are not ready to serve them. And every dollar that goes to private sector care, the way the current appropriation is will be taken out of the VA budget. So if you send more veterans out to care that is inferior and higher cost, and you take that money out of the VA budget, and that some estimates have said that it's four times as much, it will cost four times as much, then that means there's four times as little for veterans. Between 2014 and 2017, the VHA budget was for in-house care was increased by 9%, for private sector care by 49%.
Wow.
And so you do that long enough, and boy, you're going to have a disaster on your hands. And let me say that a lot, this is something that veterans in Michigan and other places really need to consider. A lot of veterans live in rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
And if you eliminate the VA and its telehealth capacity, because, you know, sometimes because it's very hard to get doctors and social workers and PTs and so forth to work in rural areas. And one of the amazing things about the VHA is it has this amazing telehealth capacity. So you could be cared for in rural California or Michigan by a physical therapist or a psychologist, you know, 3,000 miles away through this amazing mechanism.
Right.
There is not going to be, if you outsource care and eliminate the VA, veterans are going to really suffer because there's estimated 700 rural hospitals are going to close in the next 10 years. And we have 55% of rural counties in America, 55% of American counties, all of them rural, have no social worker, psychologist, or psychiatrist. So you may want choice. You know, veterans have been seduced by this idea that they're going to have choice, but there are areas in which there is no choice because there are no providers.
Right, absolutely. I was just thinking about that as I'm reading through my notes here about the negative. You know, you mentioned in your book you didn't have that many complaints. You interviewed hundreds, thousands of veterans, it sounds like. Did you ever run into somebody who had issues other than scheduling?
Yeah, I mean, sure. There's some veterans who don't like their doctor. They don't like the fact that many VA facilities are teaching hospitals, so they have residents rotating in and out, so they might change social worker, psychologist, or medical doc, you know, medical mm-hmm. resident. Some people disagree with the treatment plan. Some people don't like the person that they're seeing. There is a subset of veterans, a very small subset of veterans that have serious mental health issues, and they don't like anybody.
Well, that's true, yeah.
I know
a few of those.
Them happy. I mean, it's true of Americans in general. You know, there's nothing. And then, you know, there are some very dangerous veterans, a very, very tiny, tiny amount, who are what they call disruptive. And I fear for these veterans because the VA can't fire patients. It can't close down. You know, in the private sector, you can fire a patient if you don't like the way they look, if they don't follow your treatment regimen. I mean, I shudder to think about how I might fare, you know, if I don't take the blood pressure meds my doctor wants me to take that I'm reluctant to take.
Right.
I mean, he could fire me, you know. And they give courses to doctors about how to fire patients, you know, and in the VHA, you cannot fire a patient. I mean, you can make yourself safe, you can have security come in, et cetera, and the VHA can't close if there's a violent patient who kills someone. I mean, we had a terrible situation recently in a wonderful not-for-profit program called The Pathway Home, where a very mentally disturbed veteran killed himself, and three of the staff who directed the program, it was a residential program for people with serious problems. One of them was a VA employee, and the other had worked at the VA, and the program had to shut down. Now, you can't shut down the nation's largest healthcare system because of something like that. They will work to make it safer and so forth, but I hear a number of reports, disturbing reports, of veterans who've sought private sector care who've been fired because they didn't behave appropriately.
Right. I understand that. We've only got about 2 minutes left. This really went a lot quicker than I thought it would. We are talking with Suzanne Gordon. Her book is Wounds of War, How the VA Delivers Health, Healing, and Hope to the Nation's Veterans. It's a powerful story, and there are so many other things I wanted to get to, and maybe we can have you back on, you know, after the election and so forth, and see what we can do. Is there any last thing that you'd like to say before we're done?
Well, we're coming up on Veterans Day, and we owe it to the nation's veterans to give them the best health care that we can. And we are doing that in the VHA. And we need to strengthen the system and improve it, not starve it of resources and tear it down. And we need to honor the men and women who devote their lives at considerable financial sacrifice to, because they have a mission to serve veterans. They're very mission driven. They accept lower wages, and to take care of veterans because they want to. And I think we need to stop trashing VHA employees. I mean, obviously, there are people that woke up on the wrong side of the bed some morning, but for the most part, you have a very dedicated workforce, many of whom are veterans, taking care of veterans, and we should be supporting them in the system that they work for, not trying to tear it down.
I agree 100% with you. I want to thank you so much for being on our program today. Again, Suzanne Gordon, the book is Wounds of War, How the VA Delivers Health, Healing, and Hope to Our Nation's Veterans. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right. Well, another Veterans Radio is in the can, as they say. I want to remind everybody that tomorrow night is the Stories of Service at Hill Auditorium here in Ann Arbor, Michigan at 7 o'clock. You can go to storiesofservice.org. And make your reservation to go there. We hope that you will. This is to benefit Fisher House here in Michigan. And next week is Veterans Day. When you see a veteran, shake their hand. Say thanks a lot. And you know what? They're going to be very grateful to you. So on behalf of all of us here at Veterans Radio, you are dismissed.